Okay, so I tried to make this talk kind of looking at some our kind of most common running injuries or complaints you'll get from athletes. Is everyone primarily working with like high school students or college students with a raise of hands? High school, college, kind of team sport type stuff? Or are you guys more in like a clinical setting? Is anyone in a clinical setting? Few clinical. Okay. So I try to make it kind of where we kind of spreads the gamut. Like these are kind of the most, whether they're like actual diagnoses that, or someone that just says, you know, I Googled it and I have this. So you get all that realm. So this is kind of to help you figure out how to assess the situation and really determine what the athlete needs. So these are the common diagnoses. The ones we really see the most of, or whether they're truly what they have or they just think that's what they have. So patellofemoral pain, tendonitis, you'll get just knee pain, general knee pain kind of falls into this category. IT band syndrome is a big one. And then you start to get kind of the lower leg, can be shin splints, Achilles tendinopathy, tendonitis, or what I'm seeing a lot of is a lot of calf strains or over-tight soleus, and they don't really know why, and it's a lot related a lot to the mechanics of their run. So if we kind of start breaking these down, so if someone, an athlete comes to you and they say, I'm having knee pain, having patellofemoral pain, or my doctor said I have patellofemoral pain, so we start to kind of break down, think first about their run. So if this is a running athlete, whether it's a sprinter or a longer distance athlete, so a soccer player, football player, an actual track athlete, it can really spread the gamut. The first thing you want to do is see him run. And if there is an extreme heel strike, that's one of the potential causes of patellofemoral pain. With the extra ground reaction forces are shown to increase patellofemoral forces. The next is a large knee excursion angle. So this is probably a new one for most of you. And we'll kind of go through it in some pictures a little later on. But essentially, it's the difference in their knee angle from the time they make contact with the ground. So what's that knee angle at that point to the time they get to mid stance? There's a range that that should be in, and if it's a lot more, so it should be 20 to 25 degrees, but if it's a big range, so they're landing in a heel strike, then they almost always will have a large knee excursion angle, which means that they have this huge range to move through, and they're not great at controlling their body during that time, and so it puts a lot of force through the front of the knee. Kind of interrelated, too much knee bend at mid-stance, so they're doing like a mini squat every time they get to mid-stance because they don't know how to control all those muscles around the hip and the knee, and their quads are doing everything. And then pelvic tilt or hip drop, so the point where they're getting a lot of motion at the pelvis at mid-stance. Again, it's a lack of activation of the correct musculature and everybody working together, so it ends up being a lot of quad. And a lot of times that's combated or in addition to a lot of knee valgus. So that, especially your female athletes, you'll see a lot of that internal rotation of the femur. And chances are it's going to result in some knee pain. So that's kind of the next we move to is IT band. So you'll get a lot of people telling you they have IT band. They can tell you it's at the hip. So they got like a snapping hip or a soreness up here. But also a lot kind of right on the outside part of the knee where you get that little friction over the joint. May or may not actually be IT band. I see a lot that probably really aren't IT band, but that's what kind of the generalization of what people say. So with this one, again, kind of similar, we're going to look for that pelvic tilt. This can be with or without knee valgus. So if they're rotating inward, they are getting a lot more tension on the IT band, but also if they have a structural varus structure, so that bowed leg structure, they're going to get a lot more stress on the lateral part of the knee, and so a lot of times that will result in that kind of IT band discomfort or pain. So the next one is running on a line. So you see this a lot in track athletes. I honestly see it a pretty good amount, but essentially where the athlete is, every time they take a step, they're going like this, and sometimes they'll tell you that's what their coach told them to do. Sometimes it's just kind of, they don't have any stability, and that's kind of how they get there. But every time they do that, they turn off their glutes, and they make it put a lot more tension on that IT band. So sometimes it's just a form education. And again, we're going to go through pictures here, but I wanted to give you guys this so you have this to kind of refer to so that you can kind of say, okay, these are the things I want to kind of look at. It's not always these things, but usually, like, if someone comes in with this, you can kind of tease these out and then kind of figure out what the actual source is. So the next, last one is that lower leg. So really everything in that kind of lower leg foot area. The first one I always rule out is pronation. So if someone's having shin splints or Achilles pain, then I want to make sure that I can watch them pretty easily and say they're over pronating so that every time they step, their ankle's rolling inward. That's a pretty easy fix. Then you limited hip extension at push-off. So this is actually a really common one that I see a lot, and I think it's really widely overlooked. So I think we're going to delve into this one a lot today because I think it's very overlooked, and I think it's really common. The next one, we go back to that too much knee bend at mid-stance. So if they're going into a deep squat, they're pulling a lot of tension on that calf that doesn't need to be there. Whereas if they're a strong runner and they're up here stabilized really well on one foot, those glutes are engaging, the hamstrings are engaging, they're not going to have that same tension. You'll also see sometimes like an early heel rise. So they're here and they're already like balancing on their calf. They're putting too much strain on their calf, so that's another one. And then the last but not least, the toe running. So landing on the balls of the feet, sometimes okay with sprinters for short distances, but when you start to extend that out over longer distances, we start to see a lot of issues with trying to stabilize the foot in this position, putting a lot of stress on the calves that doesn't necessarily need to be there. And it's a pretty easy fix to just get them to a flatter position because it's all the only thing that matters is that distance to center of mass, which we're going to talk about right now. So this is how I kind of go through, like I said, when I have an athlete come in, they tell me what their diagnosis is or what they feel, what's bothering them, and I kind of take this systematic approach. So the first thing I want to do is I want to look at the foot and ankle. Is that, how does that look? I'm going to look at that from the sagittal plane, so a posterior view, from the form-wise, we're going to look at it from the lateral view. So I want to see how their foot's contacting the ground, where it is. So is it just a form change? So are they overextending? Are they understriding, overstriding? Are they landing on their toes? I can assess that pretty quickly from a side view. And then the posterior, so from the back, I'm looking at that pronation, supination. So what's the position of their foot at mid-stance? How well do they control their foot? So kind of rule those two things out because you're a form change or a shoe change, and then everything else, you can make those changes, and then you start to get into the strength piece and start to look at their strength. So I'm always taking video of my athletes, but I know that you guys can't always do that. So here's kind of a good idea of how they're looking at running. You can get a good idea from your single leg squat test. So if you have an athlete do a single leg squat for you, you know, go down as far as they can and see how well they can control it. So do a few of them, see if they break down. So the main thing you're looking at is, can they even do that? So you'll get a lot of athletes, especially young female athletes, that are like, they're like falling over just to do that. First sign that their strength isn't where it needs to be. You want to look at their foot. So is their foot rolling inward? And then keep a close eye on that knee. Do they move? Does that knee valgus happen every time they do that squat? So that will give you kind of an idea of how they probably look when they're running. Maybe not when they first start running, but by the time they get to their point where they start to have pain, is that breakdown piece. By having them do 2 or 3, even you can do 10 if you want, like single leg squats, and just see how well they control it and if they fatigue out. And then if you have access to it, which we all have phones now that take video. Most of them have slow-mo video on them. So you can almost always get some sort of video of an athlete if you can get them up on a treadmill and just take a really quick slow-mo video from the back to look at their hips and their feet, and then a quick slow-mo video just of their lateral view to kind of see where their foot's hitting the ground. You'll be able to kind of do this mini analysis yourself and kind of tease out what's going on. So let's start with that. So these obviously have angles on them that I've measured, but it's to kind of help you understand what we're looking at. So a heel strike or a midfoot strike? Anybody know which one's the best? Midfoot, yeah. So honestly, let's see if I can get this laser thing to work. I don't know if it'll go up there. So this image on the left here is your midfoot strike. And really the thing that matters most is not necessarily how the foot is contacting the ground, whether it's on the heel or on the midfoot. There's a lot of athletes that have good foot strikes, and they're still on the heel. But what you see in this right image, the issue with this contact right here is that straight leg and that very small surface area on the heel. So all that, you're putting the brakes on and all that force is going up here. And like I mentioned, that knee excursion, so now they got to move from 173 degrees to 140. So even if their mid-stance knee angle was perfect, which no one's is, they would still be moving through almost 30 degrees of range of motion. Like I said, 20 to 25 is our goal. So they pretty much for sure are moving through too much eccentrics, and they can't control. And that's like, again, assuming they're perfect. So the first thing to do is not even necessarily change how their foot's landing on the ground. I don't care if they keep landing on their heel. The research shows that doesn't really matter that much. But they move it closer to them. So they need to not be striding out here. They need to be getting their foot on the ground quickly and right underneath them. Stays on the heel. Even if you move it closer to you, you just pretty much doubled your surface area just by landing closer to you, because it's really difficult to land on that small of a surface area this close to you. It's like almost, it's literally impossible. So yes, they may not get to parallel to the ground. That's fine. You're just landing closer to you. So they're containing that center of mass. There's some analogies you can do, like running in a box, like they can't extend past a certain point. I try to just do sound cues, so tell my athletes, okay, get your foot on the ground quicker. Don't let it go ahead of you. Don't let it go ahead of you, and like just keep cueing them until they start to implement it. And usually they're actually pretty good at doing it. It's not the most difficult thing for them once they kind of understand what they need to do. So the next one is the forefoot strike. So like I just mentioned, it doesn't really matter how our foot hits the ground. It matters where it is. So, and the issue with a forefoot strike is it's never going to be close enough to your center of mass. So if this person was landing with their foot parallel to the ground, you can kind of look at that red distance right there would be about half of what it is now. So the knee angle is perfect. It's 155 to 160 is right where we want it to be. So ultimately, she's landing close to her center of mass. The problem is that her point of contact is the farthest point forward on her foot. So that's what makes a forefoot strike almost impossible to fall within ranges, is it's always going to be too far ahead of you because it's the furthest point from the forward on your foot. And then, you know, side note kind of against all that. But the other issue with the calf and the Achilles and stuff is now that when they go to mid-stance, they're not automatically loading the knee. They now have to eccentrically load their calf to get their heel contact. Then they got to turn their glutes on, and then they got to get extension, which all of that almost never happens. So there's just too many steps that it needs to go through in order to get like good mid-stance mechanics that the calf ends up doing all the work. And like I said, you get them balancing here. So their peroneals are going to flare up, all this stuff, because they're trying to provide all their stability from their lower leg. A lot of times they'll get knee pain because all their stability is trying to come from the balls of their foot, which I don't know about you guys, but I'm not very good at that. Most athletes aren't either. So any questions on the foot strike, how to kind of look at that? Like I said, use your little phone videos. Just get some quick video. See what they look like. I know it's not going to be perfect, and in the breakout session, we're going to kind of practice watching some videos in slow-mo and see who can kind of tease out what's going on. You don't have all the tools to measure the angles, but that doesn't mean you can't rule out certain things. So our next one is, didn't have animations on it. I hate that. I'll try to make it good. So anybody can guess where this person has pain? Achilles, that's a good one. A good possibility. So I believe the pain is actually at the hip and the knee, both because of that huge valgus angle of the knee. But excellent on the Achilles, because the first thing we need to do here is fix the foot, because there's no way to control the upper body if you can't control your foot. So every time her foot rolls in, her hip and her knee are going to go with it until we stabilize that foot. So a lot of times you'll see that where someone's not super symptomatic at the ankle, because they have so much going on further up the chain. So you got to pick where you want to start with. So we pick with stabilizing the foot a little bit. And then we work on the strength component of the glutes, getting more stable on one leg. Now, I suspect this person has some actual structural valgus that we may never, ever get rid of completely. So they're always going to have a little bit of valgus. But what we can do is get that glute med stronger, get them better at controlling that rotation to minimize it. They should still be able to run. There's no, maybe shorter distances, but still be able to run. So here, this one is kind of your classic, I don't know why I was doing that, classic bowed leg structure with an overcorrected foot that's going to cause IT band tightness. This person is also what we call that running on a line. So if you drew a plumb line, I didn't draw it because there's too many lines, but if you drew a plumb line down the middle of their body, their foot would be on this side of that line. So they're running on a line. They have a structural bowed leg structure, so they got that kind of bow in the leg, and then they have too much support in their shoe. So this can be a hard one to see because it kind of looks like that foot's not too bad if you just looked at the foot. But if you look further up the chain and look at the whole leg and you see that that knee is kind of bowing outward, we actually want to allow some pronation for someone like this because otherwise they're just going to always be flared up in their IT band. So we need their foot to pronate a little bit so that they can have some shock absorption. Otherwise, what happens is that every time they contact the ground, all that force goes straight up the leg and into the hip and the IT band. So they're always going to be symptomatic if we don't back off their support and let them have a little bit of pronation. Now, yeah, this can get pretty difficult if someone has a like structurally supinated foot because they don't make a lot of shoes to like shift you the other way. Those people just kind of have to deal with some IT band tightness all the time. All right, so here's your mid-stance knee flexion. So this is kind of what I was trying to show you with my little single leg squat. Gosh. So the image over here on the right is a good, well-controlled mid-stance position. So the hip and the knee, or the center of mass, is held pretty high. There's some good knee bend. Like the goal is 140, but like I said, no one gets there. So I'm usually pretty happy as long as an athlete is above 130. If they start to drop below 130 is when they start to become symptomatic in that lower leg, that front of the knee pain. So, and you can kind of see how that on the left side, left image, they're just not really controlling that. It's like, think of it as a really poorly controlled squat. So every time they run, they're doing this horribly controlled squat, and they're doing all quad, their force is going through the front of their knee, and so their knee hurts. Or their calves are really tight, one of the two. Whereas on the other side, everything's turning on really well, the center of mass stays high, the glutes engage, the hamstrings work, and everybody kind of starts to work as a cohesive unit. So this is where, like I said, I know you can't measure this. But this is where that single leg squat will give you a little bit of an idea of how they look here. And, you can kind of just, you'll be able, for some of them, if it's really bad, like if it falls into that 120 range, you can definitely kind of see that. They're just running real low and squatty, and they're usually symptomatic. So here's that knee excursion. So like I said, it's the difference from initial contact to mid-stance. The goal is 20 to 25 degrees. So the interesting thing, again, if we go back to that form change, so this person is kind of too straight at contact, but also too much knee bend. But if we fix the foot strike, we automatically close that gap. Then we can work on strength, because we all know strength takes longer than just making some quick changes in form. And yes, they won't be perfect form changes, but a lot of times they can just make some quick little changes that I've had athletes, honestly, that I got them going on form changes and their symptoms like literally disappeared that right then. Like, oh, I don't feel it anymore. So there's some definitely validity to changing the way that foot contacts the ground and where it contacts the ground. And then that gives you time to work on the strength component and get them stronger, so that they don't have as much knee bend and they have a better controlled squat. So here's the one I said we were going to touch on a little bit more. So limited hip extension. So now there's kind of, this one's kind of a tricky one because, so you can pretty much see this guy has like no extension, no hip extension, right? So he's getting to here and he's like, okay, no more. And so then what happens is now all his propulsion comes from the calf. So what we should see is this good triple extension, that glute should fire, and this should be a passive swing through. But what happens is that when you don't get hip extension, then you have to, okay, now I gotta get forward. So they use that calf, and so they get over-tight soleus. They just keep, it's like a catch-22. It just keeps getting tighter and tighter. So we definitely need to work on hip flexibility. But the question is this psoas or is this rectus? We don't know. So the best way to test for that, if you see this, is to do your Thomas test and try to figure out if it's more psoas or more rectus. Honestly, I would have, if you asked me a while ago, I would have said it's always the psoas. I always would have said, oh, their hips are tight, their hip flexors are tight, they can't get extension. But honestly, I find that more often than not, it's rectus. It's their rectus that can't get it. And you'll kind of see it happen at a slightly different point in time too, sometimes. But overall, they're tight, so they need to start obviously stretching, which none of them want to do. But this kind of helps them understand. And then some of this is neuromuscular control too. So there's some drills you can do on the wall where you kind of get them working on getting that. We'll do it in the breakout session, but getting that extension. Like this person literally could not get extension if I did not cue him. And then he, okay, I got it. Like he would get to here on the wall drill and I would be like, strain your knee. He's like, oh. And so we did that, we kept doing it, and eventually it was like, it still was that last, like he had to think about it at the last second. But we started getting better. We put him back on the treadmill and whoo, voila, he has hip extension. So some of it's just knowing how to cue that and how to train it. Which honestly, I was shocked that it just happened that quickly, but it did. Okay, so guys, any questions on any of those specific measurements? Oh, I think I'm starting to run over on time. I was trying not to go too fast, and now I'm going too slow. All right, so how do you treat and refer? So like I said, cadence, form coaching, talk them through some of these changes if you can. Sometimes it's just educating them. I'm not there like necessarily with these people all the time, but if I start telling them the things they need to think about, they make the changes on their own. Shoe recommendations, so look at what they're currently in and then make your adjustments accordingly. So if they're overcorrected and supinated, we want to back off support. If they're overpronating, we want to add stability. Runningwarehouse.com is a really great resource. So for every single shoe, they have a little chart that tells you what level of stability, whether it's neutral, stable, or motion control. So you can look at what the athlete's currently wearing. And then it can help you guide to what, like a stability. So, okay, so this is what you're in now. Usually if it's like they're in a certain brand, so say they're running an ASICS, I'll just find the next level of support in that same brand. So I'm not trying to reintroduce a whole nother variable. There's a reason why they picked that shoe in the first place. Like I said, we'll go over some wall drills and stuff in the breakout session. So the neuromuscular control piece where you can start to kind of teach these, some of the exercises you can do. And then strength and conditioning, building strength. So actually, I'm going to skip that one and come back. So for strength and conditioning, the idea is that we want to optimize the strength of the key moments by creating the strength of the joints. So we want to start by making sure they know how to turn on their glutes and all that stuff. But then we want to get them into that single leg position. I mean, I would say a huge portion of the runners I get, I tell them to stand on one leg and they're like, you're like, you run like 26 miles, but you can't stand on one leg. So they really need to be able to control that motion. And so starting with that single leg stability. So they should be able to balance for 30 seconds pretty well. They should be able to do a single leg squat in this position pretty well. They need to start being able to control those motions in this isolated environment, and then we can progress upon that. So then we can start working on single leg hops where they're moving forward and holding that position. And they're starting to engage those glutes and everything. So we want to train the positions that mimic the running and the single leg stability. And we want to get rid of all these motions, these directions that have nothing to do with our running and just cause pain. And then I always throw this one in, because I think it's important knowledge. So there's a lot of talk now about cadence. Why do we care about it? It's a function of stride length. So it's speed times stride rate, or stride rate times stride length. So when we, if you're coaching an athlete on changing their stride, they have to increase their cadence to maintain their speed. So if they were landing out here and you tell them they need to land here, they got to turn their legs over faster or they're going to go slower. But what I see a lot of is people read about cadence. I got to get my cadence higher. I got to get my cadence higher. I got to hit 180. And so they just start trying to run with a higher cadence, but they don't shoot anything to their stride. So they just end up working harder. And a lot of times that's where that lack of hip extension comes in. They're trying so hard to just turn their legs over so fast that they lose these actual good motions like their hip extension and knee extension. And so they end up creating other issues. And again, there's a PT article, I think it's from APTA, but that increasing about 10% a week is what you want to do to avoid injury. So if someone's running at a cadence of 160 and then they try to go run at 180, they're doing something wrong. So they're changing something, whether they're losing their hip extension, their knee extension, or they're doing something else, chances are they're going to end up with injury because they're making those adjustments without, like, thinking of the big picture.